One of my dreams in life is to bring patients and people together with this power of medicine. So I don't have a job unless people are good to people. Man's humanity to man. I say this all the time. I walk to work every day and I'm dependent on somebody giving up a part of themselves, either in life or in passing, so somebody else can survive. And often somebody they don't even know. I mean, there's not many jobs out there like that. That's very powerful. But we're all human, right? That altruism doesn't stop with a country. It certainly is not specific to any sort of ethnicity, race, or gender. It's throughout the entire population of the world. So why do we have these artificial barriers of country applied to the fact that we can apply a technology to everybody? And so what I would like to see in my lifetime, and it's actually coming to fruition here at Northwestern, is these borders break down and people that don't have access to their loved one getting a life-saving organ in their own country can seek some solace here at Northwestern to be able to help them.
Welcome back to Donor Diaries. This is your host, Lori Lee, here today to talk about the fascinating topic of global kidney exchange. Kidney failure is a global problem and is among the leading causes of death worldwide. The kidney shortage is not a problem unique to the United States alone, although it's perpetuated here by the high occurrence of diabetes and high blood pressure. The barriers to transplant in economically developed countries are different from those in developing countries, but regardless, kidney failure in both rich and poor countries is sadly a death sentence for many. Barriers to patients receiving a kidney transplant should be identified and removed. All kidney patients benefit from having access to a large pool of kidney donors. The bigger the pool, the higher the likelihood of finding a good donor match. This is especially important for hard-to-match patients that have high levels of HLA antibodies. It's just statistically more difficult for these patients to find a match. But many people who need a kidney transplant live in a small country where the pool of donors is small, or worse, they might live in a country that doesn't even have a transplant center. Other kidney patients might live in a country with restrictions that only allow a direct blood relative to donate. Having a friend or stranger donate to them isn't an option like it is here in the U.S. And in some countries, it's possible to get a transplant, but paired exchanges are not allowed, which really limits the patient's options and access to transplant. There's a wide range of reasons why kidney transplant is available to some, but not all. Imagine the lives that could be saved worldwide if we organized a globally inclusive kidney exchange. What could be possible if we could break down the borders and share kidneys with other countries? Today's guest is Dr. Satish Nadig, who is Chief of Transplant and the Director of the Comprehensive Transplant Center at Northwestern Medicine in Chicago. Besides being a talented and celebrated transplant surgeon, he is an inspiring leader and visionary who is somewhat new to Northwestern. I've been a volunteer working with patients and donors at Northwestern for a decade now, and I've seen firsthand the energy and passion that this man brings to the table. He's an innovator and a change maker, and today we get to pick his brain to learn about how Northwestern is part of a small network pioneering an effort to increase transplant through international kidney exchanges. Well, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Can you briefly tell us about your earlier career and how you landed at Northwestern?
Yeah, so I'm actually from a small town in South Carolina. I'm from Irmo, South Carolina, right outside of Columbia, South Carolina. And I did my undergraduate at the Washington University in St. Louis and went back home to South Carolina for medical school and had the opportunity to be the first student from the Medical University of South Carolina to ever match into a surgical residency program at Harvard. And so I was really excited about that. And so I went to Harvard for my residency, and I was just bitten by the transplant bug immediately. I was fortunate enough to be around really pioneers in transplant, like Anthony Monaco and Dr. Joseph Murray, the Nobel Prize winner for transplantation, and many other people that were really pushing the paradigm of transplantation. And it was sort of early days yet in transplant because, as many people know, transplant is a very young field. It was only just started in 1954, but it wasn't really until the 1980s where it became a legitimate field. The National Organ Transplant Act was signed in 1984, and the United Network of Organ Sharing was really came into fruition and started contracting with the government to allocate organs only in 1986, so not that long ago. So in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, when I was finishing medical school and getting into residency programs, transplant was practiced very differently than it is now. And I went on to do a PhD at the University of Oxford in transplant immunology in the lab of Catherine Wood and Peter Morris. And Peter Morris was knighted for doing the first kidney transplant in the UK. So he was Sir Peter Morris, and he had started a lab really forward thinking, looking at ways we can get people off anti-rejection medication, which has remained a passion of mine to until today even. And so I came back to stateside, went to do my fellowship at the University of Michigan, and then went back home to South Carolina to serve the citizens of South Carolina. I thought I was never going to leave. I was a South Carolinian at heart, and my dream in life was to serve my community. And then Northwestern came knocking about 10 years into my tenure in South Carolina, and I had risen the ranks of division director for academic affairs at the Medical University of South Carolina and had an opportunity to be on a bigger stage here at Northwestern to really change the paradigm of transplant. And I knew that what I wanted to do is stay true to the early folks that really pushed transplant forward in really trying to make transplant better. And there was, as I mentioned, it's so young that we've come a far, long way, but we have such a long way to go. We're using the same anti-rejection medications that were developed in the 1970s and 80s, some of them by my own mentors, largely the same techniques and the same preservation solutions, for example. But now I feel like we're really in a renaissance of transplant with the advent of robotics, of kidney exchange, which we're going to talk about today, of nanotherapeutics, which is near and dear to my heart, with the basic science lab that I run, and artificial tissue development, amongst many other things. We're really in the renaissance of the next era of transplant, which I like to call the era of technology. Mm-hmm. And so I came here to Northwestern to, yes, not only do more transplants by saving more lives, but more importantly, to try to do them differently so we can sort of move the needle in the field of transplantation in general, not only nationally, but breaking down some national borders, which we'll talk about today as well.
We will. I bet South Carolina misses you, but we are so happy to have you here, and you have certainly shaken things up in the last few years.
Well, I appreciate it. And I certainly miss all of my family and friends in South Carolina, but I think we're doing really great work here at Northwestern, which will benefit everybody. So that's
great. We are. And I love how fast you move. It's pretty incredible. So what sets Northwestern Transplant apart from other transplant centers? And you are totally free to brag when you answer that question.
It's really easy to brag on. I mean, Northwestern, there's only four universities and hospitals that are in the top 10 in the country. So Harvard, Mass General, Columbia Presbyterian, Johns Hopkins, and Northwestern. So to be amongst that group of four institutions is pretty remarkable. And what does that really mean? So that means that the hospital is firing on all cylinders, and it means that the university is firing on all cylinders. And there's a lot of crosstalk between the two to not only take care of more patients, as I mentioned, is one of my passions, but to also change how we do it too. And so really what sets Northwestern apart are three big domains. Having a robust infrastructure to handle a volume of patients where we can transplant the community, make the community better, be able to bring more people in, have the infrastructure to see more people. We have 11 Northwestern hospital systems. We have a liver hub in CDH. We work with our satellites to be able to get access to care for anybody that has end-stage organ failure. We even do that beyond cultural borders. So we do that with the Hispanic Access to Care Program. And we have an African-American Transplant Access Program that just breaks down barriers and improves the equity in transplantation to improve access to organs and medical care to help people live longer and live better lives. So that's one domain. The second domain is through quality. And although we're growing, sometimes people see that when a program grows, the quality drops off. And that's something we did not want to do. We had a mission when I first got here to have a patient-centric impact via quality, innovation, and education. And quality was front and center. And I'm pleased to say that we actually have the best quality in the state of Illinois and one of the amongst the best in the country, even though we have growing numbers of transplants that are happening. And then the third thing is this paradigm shifting work that I was referring to be a research institution that's just a cut above. And we have the second highest amount of research funding in transplant than anywhere else in the country. So if you talk about a program and they're transplanting more people, they have the best quality, and they're doing it differently with the most amount of National Institutes of Health funding in the state and the second most amount in the country for transplant, I think that speaks for itself in setting us apart from anywhere else in the world, frankly.
And we're doing how many trials right now?
We're right now running over 90 plus clinical trials just in transplant alone. Pretty remarkable.
And what's the leading thing? What are we known for in terms of what we're learning in these trials?
Yeah, so the number one thing that Northwestern is a hub for is this holy grail in transplantation called tolerance. How do we get the organ that we're transplanting to not reject while keeping the immune system of the patient intact? So right now, as I mentioned to you before, we're using the same anti-rejection medications now that were developed in the 1970s and 80s. And those anti-rejection medications go throughout your whole body to suppress your whole body's immune response in order for the organ, in this case, let's say the kidney, to keep from rejecting. But what if we were able to keep the kidney from rejecting and maintain your immune response so you can fight off those cancers and infections and all the other metabolic effects and side effects of these medications? People aren't necessarily passing away from the organ failing. They're passing away from the side effects of the medications. And so what we've been able to do is have multiple trials in trying to figure out ways to minimize those anti-rejection medications and in some cases completely get people off those anti-rejection medications. And so we have 37 people off anti-rejection medication with some of our stem cell therapy and cellular therapeutics. Then that's more than anywhere else in the world. We are really pioneering this idea of tolerance, which is not mainstream, but hopefully in my lifetime it will be. My particular research looks at taking those anti-rejection medications and packaging them into nanoparticles, small, tiny particles that are delivered to the organ rather than the patient. So then we suppress the organ, not the patient. But in various ways, we're approaching this technology to really mitigate the side effects that these anti-rejection medications have. So that's one thing, although there's many things that we're known for. That's one thing on the basic science side we're known for. I think on the clinical science side, it's really access to care. We're really known for being able to figure out how we can get people on the list. And then once they're on the list, improve their outcomes once they get transplanted through things like improving their frailty scores, doing prehabilitation rather than rehabilitation. If I asked you, Lori, you have a marathon to run next month, what's the first thing you're going to be doing?
Looking for the Lori behind me to see.
You're going to be training. You're going to be training. You're going to be running. You're going to be doing all of the things you need to do to get yourself in shape for that marathon. Well, putting somebody through a transplant is a marathon, yet we expect them to be fit and ready to go. And then they spend their time in the hospital, and then we have to put them into rehab places afterwards. Well, what if we were able to prehab, really get the people fit going into transplant? And so that's a lot of things we're working on as well. And then I mentioned access in a way of getting people on the list. So these culturally sensitive programs like the Hispanic Transplant Program and the African American Transplant Access to Care Program are unique. They're the first and largest in the country. We have NIH funding around them. And so these are just many of the examples of many of the things that we're known for. But all of it comes down to that one hyphenated word of patient centricity.
Patient centricity. I like that. Mm-hmm. And I also like that you light up when you talk about nanoparticles.
Yeah. Or as my previous partner in South Carolina used to call them, nerdoparticles.
I know right now one of the goals that you speak quite passionately about is to become a destination transplant center. But beyond that, your long-term goal is to make Northwestern an international destination transplant center. What does it mean to be a destination or international destination transplant center, and why is it important?
Yeah, so I think we are a very unique situation. We're in an iconic city We have a great amount of access to this city, and we have a lot of resources in Chicago and at Northwestern to be able to offer to people that may be in resource-lean environments. And so it's not just with abdominal transplant, but even with thoracic transplant. We want to just, when people think of the word transplant, they should be thinking Northwestern, whether that's within the walls of the country or without the borders of the world. And we want to be first in man and first to do things that are pushing the envelope so that people know when I have a disease process, this isn't necessarily the end of it. There are options available to me. This is happening above and below the diaphragm, frankly. You know, our thoracic group did the first lung transplant for COVID. Many people know that. But these are patients that were dying of a virus we didn't even know about, yet we found a way to help them. Our lung transplant group is now running trials for patients that have cancer. That's unheard of above the diaphragm. And so these are patients that have been on hospice that have no hope and pulled out of hospice getting lung transplants and surviving and doing well. That's unbelievable. Our heart transplant group are putting hearts in TransMedics boxes and getting them to pump outside of the body so that it can optimize these marginal organs for transplantation. And
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, basically it's these artificial ways to get these organs that would otherwise not be transplantable rehabilitated outside of the body and then transplanted.
Wow.
And we're doing that for liver transplantation where we're pumping livers. We are, you know, doing that across cross matches for kidney transplantation, for example, where we did the first transplant in the world where there was a patient listed for or on the in the hospital for 422 days and was so sensitized, had so many antibodies to the general population, and she needed a lung and kidney transplant. So we applied some of the knowledge that we had from kidney transplantation and desensitization to lung transplant as well, and we did a combined lung kidney transplant for this patient who had otherwise no hope and would have died, and it was successful. And it was the first time a lung and kidney had been transplanted in a patient across a positive cross match. And she walked out of the hospital, and I just saw her a few weeks ago for her 1 year visit. And she would not have been here a year ago. Her husband was an ex-Chicago police officer, really a pillar of the community, and we were able to give her back to him. We did the first successful lung liver transplant here at Northwestern just a little under a year ago now. And ironically, the patient was a previous Northwestern nurse many years ago. So I think that there's things that we need to do as a group to just say, you know, not take no for an answer and look at the resources that we have on the basic science side, on the bioengineering side, leverage that top four Northwestern University ranking amongst all the smart people that are over there in Evanston to help push the envelope with us a little bit too. And why a destination center? Well, there's not many places that are like us. And so when we have all of this expertise here, it should be that we have the opportunity to offer that expertise to people outside of the country, not just keep it to ourselves.
100% agree with that. Yeah. That's exciting stuff. Yeah. What should our listeners know about International Kidney Exchange?
One of my dreams in life is to bring patients and people together with this power of medicine. So I don't have a job unless people are good to people. Man's humanity to man. I say this all the time. I walk to work every day and I'm dependent on somebody giving up a part of themselves, either in life or in passing, so somebody else can survive. And often somebody they don't even know. I mean, there's not many jobs out there like that. That's very powerful. But we're all human. Right? That altruism doesn't stop with a country. That certainly is not specific to any sort of ethnicity, race, or gender. It's throughout the entire population of the world. So why do we have these artificial barriers of country applied to the fact that we can apply a technology to everybody? And so what I would like to see in my lifetime, and it's actually coming to fruition here at Northwestern, is these borders break down and people that don't have access to their loved one getting a life-saving organ in their own country can seek some solace here at Northwestern to be able to help them.
So let's talk about some of those challenges in other countries. So it could be that the country is just a small population. what problems do those countries have in terms of access to transplantation?
It's a great question. So it's, you know, there's so many reasons a person would not be able to get a transplant in their own country. One of those could be it is a small country. They don't have the resources to have a transplant center, for example, or they're resource lean and they can't afford a transplant center. Or they have rules in place in those particular countries where only if you're related to the person can you donate to that person. Or otherwise, they don't have the technology to desensitize patients, for example, do some of the things that we do, these immunologic tricks and medications that we give to decrease the amount of antibodies somebody has in them so that they can accept an organ. So some of these next generation technologies are not applicable to them. So what option do they have? To watch their child die because they can't get an organ, or have the opportunity to go somewhere that can help them. And in the meantime, if they're as part of an exchange, they can be part of a chain to help multiple other people. And so that's what we're trying to combat.
So you mentioned that some countries don't allow you to donate unless you're related. So here we can donate to whoever we want, or you can do, you know, what a lot of people do and donate to a complete stranger.
Correct.
So in other countries, that's just not an option.
Correct.
So if you do not have a family member who's willing and able to donate, you're out of luck.
Correct. Yeah. And it's pretty remarkable to think, because being able to have free will and donate to whoever you want is a right that we have that mm-hmm. we think we take for granted sometimes, but that's not necessarily the case. Yeah.
Guess you have to be really nice to your family. And
that's right. That's right.
Can you tell us about how Northwestern is currently spearheading efforts to begin a global kidney exchange?
Yeah. So we've actually partnered with the Alliance for Paired Kidney Donation, and we are spreading our wings, opening our doors to countries across the world. Mostly we've worked in the Middle East. We started talking to groups in Italy, for example. We initially went out to the Ukraine to help with their kidney transplant program before the war, but we didn't stop there. Actually, after the war happened and we knew that transplant wasn't going to happen, some of our surgeons here in the transplant program went to the Ukraine and operated in wartime. So we were able to help them in some ways, really be part of the community there. And so we were doing some cancer operations and things like that there in the Ukraine.
Wow. Do you normally do that? Or did you do that because you had to break the deal with them?
It wasn't necessarily that the deal was broken as much as it just never got off the ground, because as we were going through the process to finalize the deal for transplant, Russia invaded. And so what happened then is they reached out to us and said, you know, our transplant programs are on hold. We are not transplanting. But more importantly, this was in conversations we were having with them, patients that had certain types of cancers, because transplant surgeons also operate on certain organs that have cancers in them as well. Those patients weren't getting operated on either. And it was really a no-brainer. We were in a faculty meeting here at Northwestern, and some of my faculty said, we really need to still help. And so they volunteered to fly to the Ukraine. So Zach Deach went over to the Ukraine with delegation from Northwestern and operated on these patients that had cancer in wartime. In the meantime, I also knew that the trainees in the Ukraine were not getting their transplant training. So we opened our doors to the trainees. And so we had transplant nephrologists come that were in training to be transplant nephrologists come shadow us and get some of their learning here at Northwestern as well.
Wow.
So we were able to do a two-way sort of benefit to help the cause in the Ukraine.
What an interesting time to get to help out.
Yeah, right.
Can you tell us a story about one of the international exchanges we've had here?
Yeah. So just recently, I was in Abu Dhabi and we were working through some of the partnerships that we had there. And we came to know of a patient and her daughter, a mother-daughter combo. And they were already sort of talking to the Alliance for Paired Kidney Donation. And the mother had a blood group that was different than the daughter's, and she was not compatible to donate to her daughter. And they were not able to find a suitable donor for her daughter, and her daughter was 12 years old. And without a donor, she would have had kidney failure. She was already on dialysis, and you know, her lifespan would not have been that long. So we were having these discussions, and we made it very clear we were in a position to be able to help them. By the time I got back from the UAE, we had completed her workup in a 2-day period. They flew here, and her mother donated her kidney. And although not a match to her daughter, she was able to donate her kidney to a patient that had been on our waiting list for many years and was not able to find a donor. So the mother happened to be a match to that particular recipient on our own waiting list. And an altruistic donor in North Carolina was able to donate their kidney to the mother's daughter. And both donors and recipients are doing great. Wow. And the mother and daughter flew back to UAE recently with a working kidney off dialysis.
So how does that get paid for?
Yeah, so multiple different ways in the international realm. In the U.S., it's by insurance, obviously. But in the international realm, a lot of times governments, if they can't offer a transplant in their own government, the government will pay for this particular individuals to come to a place which who can do their transplant. And we'll often get these consults because we're leaders in desensitization, this idea of taking antibodies off of a particular recipient so that they can accept more organs. So Dr. Friedewald and our transplant nephrology group are real front runners in this in the world, frankly. So being at the tip of the spear in that realm makes us, you know, top of mind to countries that need to, that don't have desensitization. And so we're able to offer that to them. And so if they can't offer that, the government will pay for it. Otherwise, they can do self-pay. So some of the patients do pay for the transplants themselves. A few, but some do. And then otherwise, if patients are willing to move to the U.S., you know, that's an option. But most of the time, their governments will pay for them.
So that sounds tricky, though. So it sounds like it's accessible to some, but not to everybody. Is there some level of privilege you need to have to be able to come over from another country and do this? Or have you, in some ways, figured out how this can be self-financing?
Yeah, so I think that ability to come over has to be there. Like, somebody has to be able to have the transportation ability. For example, be able to afford plane tickets to come and things like that. So there is a certain level of privilege in the sense of willingness to come to a different country to get their transplant, et cetera. But contrary to popular belief, it's not these people that are on their private jets, for example. I mean, they're all, you know, normal people, normal families who are just trying to find a way that their loved one can get a life-saving organ, and they just use the assistance of their government who pays for their travel and their ability to come over here because they in their own country can't offer it to them.
Who takes care of these people once they get here? They're coming from a foreign country. It has to be scary to arrive here, maybe not even speak the language.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually have a very robust international office and international program here at Northwestern Hospital. And they help out with accommodation, with language, with getting them to their appointments. And it's pretty seamless in that way. And it's not just transplant we do it for. You know, we do it for heart surgery, lung surgery, oncology, various medical therapeutics. So people come from other countries to Northwestern as a destination center in other things as well, so not just transplant.
Wow, I'm glad you have that. That's incredible. I know here, if I wanted to get a transplant in Florida, I have to do my follow-up here in Florida. So a lot of people stay in the state that they are for logistical reasons. Yeah. How does that work?
It's a great question. So that's one of the reasons we actually travel to these countries. We meet the nephrologists there. We work with the nephrologist, and we're very lucky to be an internationally reputable organization because, believe it or not, we have many people that have trained here who are now in a lot of these countries. And they've benefited from the training of Northwestern. We've trained them. We know what training they have. And we partner with them, in fact. When I was in Abu Dhabi, one of the transplant nephrologists was a transplant nephrology fellow here at Northwestern. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's very helpful. But that's not the case everywhere. And so what we do is we don't just take care of these patients ourselves. We help them take care of their own patients. And so we stay on consultation for them when they go back home. I often get emails about particular things that are happening and needing, you know, physicians needing direction on how to take care of particular. So we make ourselves available as consults.
Telehealth.
Basically like telehealth, yeah. And sometimes it is telehealth. But we train the physicians if they don't already have training in transplant. And many of these places have very good transplant training in general. They just weren't able to offer this particular thing. So we partner with the local physicians to take care of these patients post-transplant. And we're always available for consultation. So that's kind of how we handle it. We do go there and see some of these patients that we've transplanted periodically, you know, to make sure that we can be of assistance as they move. The dialysis in and of itself is over $100,000 taxpayer issue here in the U.S. And so, but more importantly, you know, you have a 20% increase 20% off of your life every year you're on dialysis. So not only is it expensive monetarily and financially, but it's expensive because it just adds to your chronic illness, which adds to hospital bills and all of these things as you move forward. So when somebody comes off dialysis, they become healthier, which becomes more cost effective financially, and they're not paying for dialysis every year. So certainly that's why one of the acts that was passed through the government's kidney care model, where nephrologists are incentivized to refer their patients for transplant rather than keeping them on dialysis. And so more patients we're seeing are being referred early rather than staying on dialysis, because the nephrologists are actually incentivized also to move forward with transplant.
So even if we're helping pay for these people to come over from other countries to get transplanted, the cost of that is going to be less than what it would cost to keep somebody on dialysis.
Yeah, so and we don't necessarily help pay for them to come over. Their own government helps pay for them. So we don't necessarily pay for them. But what we do benefit from is a lot of times these are in chains or exchanges, and people that are on our list get off dialysis, which eventually helps everybody here.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about the black market of kidney exchange? How can International Kidney Exchange deprive the black market?
Yeah, you never really know what the details are because it's the black market, but there's certainly in some countries this compensation for organs, et cetera. And there's sort of loose rules around that. And we're very clear in the U.S., you know, we do not compensate. We do not reimburse people for organ transplants or donating their organs. But what we can do is offer this infrastructure that we have that is within the ethical and legal realm of exchange, and people can get out of the confines of maybe the only thing that they have is something that may not be as ethical, but they have something else that's open to them that above board, let's say.
So. Yeah. So more ethical, safe options for them to be able to pursue.
Sure.
Versus having to do it illegally if they feel they don't have another option.
Right. Exactly. Mm.
I assume there's critics that oppose the idea of International Kidney Exchange. What are they saying, and what would you want to say back to them?
Yeah, no, I think the optics can sometimes be misleading, and sometimes what people think if they see it in the media or they just hear about it is somebody's jumping on their private jet, very privileged, coming here, getting an organ, going back. That couldn't be further from the truth, actually. These are very normal middle-class families like you and me who are just trying to get their loved one a life-saving organ, and they happen to be in a resource-lean environment or an environment where they don't have the technology to be able to get a transplant. And so just like we have insurance, their government has an opportunity to have a process where they can subsidize some of this funding for them to get a transplant. So they often come here for the transplant. But the beauty of it is, and what people don't realize, is oftentimes that's also part of a chain or an exchange. And so many of our kidney transplant recipients that are on our list are benefiting from that as
well. So it's mutually beneficial on both sides.
Yeah, it's mutually beneficial.
Wow. Is this becoming more widely accepted?
We're really out front, so we'll see. I think we're really leaders in this field, and there's not many people that are doing it in the way that we're doing it, by partnering with APKD, et cetera. So we'll see. But I think that it's sort of a no-brainer once people do it, that they realize you're just helping more people, and that's why we go into this field to begin with. And so I think it will be much more widely accepted once people realize the structure around it.
Yeah, and the impact, the possible impact.
Right.
Do you want to explain who AKPD is?
APKD, so the Alliance for Paired Kidney Donation, is an alliance that was set up by Mike Reese, who basically allow for matching of donors and recipients. It used to be just in the nation, but now have really been leaders in doing it internationally as well. And what we've done at Northwestern is create these hubs around the country. So we have a hub here regionally where we can partner with other institutions and open up our list and their list and see who's compatible with transplant amongst these hub institutions, and APKD sort of quarterbacks that.
So I know one thing we talk about is donors, and that for a donor, it's ideal if you can donate your organ and recover in your own bed, right? Would it ever be possible for somebody to donate their kidney in another country and have the kidney transported here, or will the donor always need to be coming here?
Yeah, I would love that. The issue with it is when an organ travels across country lines, There's a lot of issues with customs and there's logistics that make it quite difficult for that to happen. So it's in the short term, it's likely going to be travel of the people,
person.
The actual person. Yeah. But I think, you know, I've always said it's shorter to fly from London to Chicago than, you know, some places in California to Chicago, you can say, or Hawaii to Chicago. It's, you know, Canada is just across the way and Mexico is as well. So, you know, sometimes from a geographical perspective, this seems sort of like we should be doing this already, but there's a lot of logistics around, you know, organs traveling across country lines. So I think for the short term, at least, you know, this is going to be people coming
one day, maybe.
That's right. That's yeah. Right. Yeah.
What countries are participating in global exchange right now?
Yeah. So I know that with the APKD and not necessarily all with Northwestern, but of course, we've talked about the Middle East, UAE, Qatar, et cetera, Israel, Italy, places in Europe, Mexico. And, you know, what's really interesting about Mexico is that they've been interested in partnering with some of our clinical trials as well. So this now goes into a whole different realm of not only doing the transplants, but going back to changing the paradigm in other countries as well, which would be kind of exciting.
If that
became true.
What about Canada?
Well, Canada has their own transplant program. They have their pretty robust transplant programs across the country, but certainly, you know, we could do exchange. We haven't done an exchange with them, but we certainly could. Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like an obvious one?
Yeah, it does seem obvious, but, you know, they have pretty large transplant programs themselves too. So
they're going to keep to themselves.
Well, you know, we haven't approached it with Canada, but, you know, obviously that's something that we could do. It's, you know, obvious through APKD. So.
Well, what else do you want our listeners to know about Global Kidney Exchange?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing for people to understand is that this is really a way to break down all of the artificial barriers we put in front of ourselves to keep us, to sort of silo ourselves. And we can use transplant as a real powerful tool to just help one another. And it just really gets down to that whole humanity premise. And you know, it's medicine is the great equalizer. We all get sick. We all want to get healthy and we all need people to help us get healthy. And so we just, you know, that's what Northwestern's here to do. So
if I interview you in 5 years on the same topic, what do you think you're going to tell me about International Kidney Exchange?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that Northwestern's an international destination center and that we have, we are front and mind of many countries across the globe, and that we're not just isolated to a particular region or a particular country, but really we've created these nodes, these hubs all across the globe to allow for paired kidney exchange and get people off dialysis internationally.
Well, I'm excited to be a part of that with you.
Yeah, we're happy that you're on the ride and we're on this ride together. So it's good.
Well, thanks for everything today.
I really enjoyed
our interview.
Thank you.
To learn more about Dr. Satish Nadig and Northwestern Transplant, please check out my show notes. You'll also find links to more information about Global Kidney Exchange, the Alliance for Paired Kidney Donation, and a great presentation from last month's guest, Al Roth, that discusses Global Kidney Exchange. Donor Diaries is produced by my partner in crime, Rob Lee, with Maitrey River Productions. If you're enjoying this podcast, please make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast so you know when we drop a new episode. You can also find us on Facebook by searching the Donor Diaries podcast. Thanks for listening.